All right. I'm going to ask you all to suspend judgment, for a moment at least. You see, this is the time of year resolutions are made, and if you're anything like me, your resolutions go through a fear filtering process. First, I start with big, hairy, audacious goals. Maybe you have these too. Maybe it's something you think you can't do, but you always wanted to do. Maybe it's something you've been putting off, but now you're ready to tackle. I start with these goals too. Yes, I start with these big, hairy, audacious goals. Then I pass them through my frontal lobe and see what, if anything, comes out on the other side. My fear filter sounds like this. What will they think of me? What if I fail? What if I embarrass myself? What if I'm not smart enough, not brave enough, not confident enough? What if I'm not blank enough? What does your fear sound like? What questions does it ask you? Now, I initially asked you to suspend judgment, and this is where it will come into play, and it requires some imagination. So I would invite everyone to close their eyes just for a moment and imagine there's a blank note card on your lap. On that note card, write a resolution for next year. Now, not just any resolution, but a big, hairy, audacious one. In other words, write what you would resolve to do if you really had no fear. This is not a trap. I promise I will not force you to follow through with this. But for now, just answer that question. What resolution would I make if I really had no fear? Now, don't just think small. Really think about something big. Really allow yourself a chance to dream here. What resolution would I make if I really had no fear? When you're done, you may open your eyes. I actually have a dear friend who doesn't make resolutions. She tells me, why commit to something I know I'm not going to follow through on? And it's a hard logic to argue, though I do, in some intuitive way, always end up thinking about a new year as a new start, a blank slate, 525,600 minutes to create myself anew. I and millions of others, somewhere between tonight and tomorrow morning, will weave these possible futures by hand, take them off the loom, wear them around for a bit in the mind's eye, and think, really think, about the future. What makes humans different from every other animal is that we think about the future. Certainly other animals prepare, but more in a, I can't resist this urge to bury this acorn sort of way. Humans, on the other hand, are intentional. We have visions for a life that could be better than the ones we have now. Harvard social psychologist Dr. Daniel Gilbert has done some incredible research on this very topic, and maybe, just maybe, it can tell us something of value when we consider our own resolutions. The first thing you need to know, he teaches, is that humans have incredibly good experience simulators known as our prefrontal cortex. Imagine, if you will, lying on your back on a soft carpeted room. When suddenly the door swings open and no less than 30 golden retriever puppies flood in, jumping all over your body and kissing your face. Whew, feels great, right? Not only is our prefrontal cortex a good simulator, you can actually physiologically feel as though an envisioned experience is happening to you. This is an exceedingly helpful tool, whether it's your caveman ancestor wondering if he should still eat that two-day-old mammoth, and the answer, luckily for you, was no, or whether you're a modern man wondering what it would be like to volunteer at the local dog shelter, and I'll tell you, the more I think about the wave of puppies, I am leaning yes. This is a tool we are all born with that operates on autopilot and helps us avoid future pain and seek future pleasure. This is an exceedingly helpful tool, but, and there's always a but, for all that our prefrontal cortex does well engaging our immediate hedonic experience, it actually does quite poorly engaging long-term happiness. Dr. Gilbert highlights some compelling studies along these lines. The first tracks the happiness levels of two groups of people who each faced a life-changing event. Those in group A won the lottery, and those in group B became paraplegic. Now, if you're like me, you're immediately firing up your experience simulator, and it's telling you that really, really, you believe that winning the lottery would make you happier on average, all things considered. And if you think this, you're not alone. However, because these are two populations for whom there is excellent data, you can actually point to metrics measuring the happiness levels 1 year after their life-changing event. Lo and behold, what do the data point to? These two groups of people, on average, report equal happiness levels 1 year later. Now, what is going on here in our minds that leads us to automatically assume that group A should be permanently overjoyed and group B should be permanently devastated? Dr. Gilbert points to the concept of impact bias, that is, the tendency to overestimate the hedonic impact of future events. He points out that we overestimate the impact on our long-term happiness of hearing compliments or hearing insults, of getting or not getting a promotion, of gaining or losing a romance, of winning or losing a sporting event, and yes, of winning or losing an election. The key here is that our frontal lobe seems to work well in simulating short-term experiences, but works poorly in projecting long-term states of mind. Because of this, we overestimate the impact of these events, both in their intensity and in their longevity. In other words, and this is important, we overestimate how long we can ride the high from a win, but more importantly, we underestimate our resiliency. We underestimate our resiliency. Dr. Gilbert calls this intrinsic resiliency our psychological immune system. And I've seen this psychological immune system firsthand in my life. I long had the aspiration to attend graduate business school, and so when my application was accepted and I thought about starting in the fall, those thoughts triggered feelings of stress. But as motivational speaker Tony Robbins famously says, stress is just the achiever's word for fear. And if you were to look under the hood, that's exactly what you would see. Fear of not fitting in, fear of appearing incompetent, fear of saying the wrong thing, fear of not saying the right thing. And what happened? I cannot say that everything went smoothly. In fact, at different times, all of those things happened. So my message here is not that the world is perfectly patient and loving and kind and forgiving. Rather, it's that the sting from all those events healed much quicker and left my memory far faster than I thought they would when I imagined them happening before starting school. Dr. Gilbert concludes from his work that, quote, with rare exceptions, events that happened over 3 months ago have almost no impact on your current level of happiness, end quote. It is a scientific basis for a well-worn maxim that time heals all wounds. I would invite you all to consider a time when you imagined something going poorly, then experienced it actually going poorly, only to realize that the negative intensity and longevity of the event was far overestimated. And just to be clear, I'm not advocating a blindly optimistic view of life. In fact, if we're being honest, pain is often traced back to moments of courage. If you have the courage to learn something new, you may feel the pain of incompetence. If you have the courage of introspection, you may feel the pain of regret. If you have the courage to love, you may feel the pain of loss. And if you have the courage to try, you may feel the pain of failure. It's not that setbacks don't exist, and it's not that the pain doesn't exist. It's just that they don't devastate us. Yes, time and time again, we surprise ourselves with our resiliency. And so, what do we make of the ritual of New Year's resolutions? 2017 was a difficult year for many of us, and there's a lot worth resolving to change for next year. We ask ourselves, Who will I be for myself? Who will I be for my friends? Who will I be for my family? And who will I be for my community? There are many resolutions worth making, and there's a lot of fear. But if service is really our prayer, then we are called to action. We're called to think beyond ourselves, and we are called to look beyond the borders of what is safe and secure, even while the latest CNN news alert makes us want to retreat to the comfort of our living rooms. Sometimes it can feel like an impasse, torn between the instinct to serve and the fear of the unknown. But what if we really understood how resilient we were, how stubbornly strong and thoroughly effective our psychological immune system really was? When you really think about it, it would make those moments of courage, when you commit to something greater and grander, something audacious, something that feels just beyond your reach, it would make those moments a lot less scary. When you really think about it, you can't help but ask yourself, what resolution would I make if I really had no fear? Thank you.